From the Lynn DeGrand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, it's the 10th day of May, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities. Frayne Olson from NDSU will be here. And we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Mark Brusso at Everstream Analytics.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, July corn 20 and a half lower, settled at $7.11¾. December at $6.09¼, down 27 and a quarter for the day. July beans were down 2¼ at $15.87½, and November at $14.14¼, down 19 and a quarter. The bean meal that finished up 50 cents in the lead. The oil at 64 cents lower today, and July wheat down 31 and a quarter at $7.31 for the soft red. The hard red July finished that at 703½, down 33½. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss the marketplace. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us. Kind of a tough day in Chicago. Not a turnaround Tuesday, but certainly different today on a Monday than it was on Friday.
Yeah, down and dirty Monday here. We've been having green Mondays, and this is a red one, but man, we've had a heck of a run, and we're overbought, so we'll see if it's a one-to-two-day correction like we've been accustomed to. It seems like 1 to 2 days down has just been about it. Crop report's coming up, so you know, imagine a little liquidation ahead of that. But fundamentals, I don't know if matter a whole lot. Fundamentally, we did see some rain in the drier areas here in Illinois, into Iowa, into the Dakotas. Not, you know, big coverage out in the Dakotas, but you know, some spotty. Just cracking that barrier there and seeing some actual moisture hit the ground might change the trend there and kind of help them out for the most part. Fundamentally, the other thing we saw is some cancellations of China on old crop corn. They canceled about 280,000 tons of old corn purchases, and they did buy over 1 million metric tons of new corn. So the trade's kind of eyeballing the idea maybe they're going to be rolling some old sales into the new crop sales for the most part. Commodity funds were sellers on the day, not huge amounts. Instead of buying, they turned sellers and just kind of collapsed on itself. They sold about 15,000 contracts of corn, about 16,000-17,000 contracts of beans as we went into the close there throughout the trading session. Other fundamental thing, I guess, is this afternoon we'll see how the planting progress report comes out. Corn planting progress expected to be about 67% complete. Beans 40% complete. Made tremendous headway. Guys really pushed it ahead this last rain event. Hopefully the low areas could handle some of the rain. Don't have to deal with a whole lot of replant. Then the other fundamental thing, of course, will be Wednesday, 11 a.m. We'll see a update version of the monthly supply-demand report. When you look at the carryout estimates, they're looking for corn carryout to be about 1.275 billion bushels. That's about 750 million bushels below the April estimates. Beans, about 117 million bushels, and that's down from 120 last month. Then as we move forward here, of course, the focus will be on the 21 carryout. Probably going to still be looking at business trend line yields, business as usual, but on the 21 estimates, carryout estimate on corn is 1,344, 1.34 billion bushels, and bean carryout 138 million bushels. So if demand stays robust, it's going to be a fine line on yield. And once again, the weather guys are going to continue to kind of get the headline news here, because we're going to need some fairly good growing conditions throughout the entire growing season to have the production to meet that big demand. Technically, if you're a momentum indicator person, we kind of rolled over here. We went up to the upper end, kind of tested and closed a little lower here, so we'll see if we'll see some correction. The key short term is July corn futures at $7, the new crop December here futures at $6 to $5.95. Kind of see if we can stay above those levels. Bean wise, July beans is 1565 area, to 60. November beans, of course, $14 to this $13.95 area are kind of short-term support levels. If they can kind of hold there, maybe we can see some sideways congestion type trade for the most part. So a dynamic move. It's been a heck of a ride here. So we'll see what we're looking at here as we move forward here as we get more into the growing season.
Yeah, so you're having producers stand aside going into the USDA report, or do you have a feeling about which direction this thing will take afterwards?
I have no clue what that report's going to do. I mean, I don't think it matters anymore. You can throw the fundamentals out the window. Big money's in charge and the funds. You got you got 16-year-old kids trading the corn market. You know, they're the Redrick and the Robin Hoods and all that. There's some money pools going in, and there's been a lot of questions from the public. What's a margin call? Well, you're probably fixing to find out what a margin call is. But I could probably spend a half hour on producer strategy right here. The main thing is I've talked puts for a long, 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 long time. You might want to convert those puts to actual cash sales. Those puts still have some value in them, of course, due to the high volatility. And also real quickly here, for those who sold call options, whenever you sell a call, and from a producer's point of view, you can get to that strike price, you need to convert that to a cash sale. Treat it as a hedge. And whatever you do, stick to your plan. Don't try to come out on one side and hope the market comes back on the other side. But, yeah, give all the guys and gals you hear on this program a call and get an update. And above all, call your cash grain people. See where you are on your marking there at the elevator. Don't wait and be surprised.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
That's Kirk Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Let's check in now with Frayne Olson. He's an extension agricultural economist at North Dakota State University in Fargo. Thank you for being with us today, Frayne. I appreciate it. We are at a unique point. I don't want to call it a tipping point or a turning point, just a unique point in the marketplace because there is just a lot of open space to the upside in the charts as it's related to the market. So 657, 758, I don't suggest that any of those are coming, but they're there. And then the downside drop support is at 6 and somewhere between 6 and 5. There's a lot of congestion in that area. I'm wondering, as we go into Wednesday's USDA report, what you're watching most closely and what your thought process is as it relates to both marketing corn and soybeans, and you can take old or new crop up or both.
Yeah, so let's talk with first about the new crop numbers, because the May WASDE report is the first month that USDA provides their initial forecast for new crop supply and demand. So I think a lot of the focus is going to be on what USDA is saying for their initial numbers, because again, they update them monthly, what the initial numbers will be for the 2021-22 crop, the crop that's going in the ground right now. On the production side, there's obviously a lot of questions about planted acreage. And again, you know, we're going to be watching the weather forecast and yield potential throughout the summer. Personally, I do like to look at what that demand base looks like. And for both corn and beans, the first place I think I'm going to go to is look at that export forecasted number. Because when we think about domestic consumption, whether it be in the crushing sector, whether it be ethanol or feed, we do see some movement up and down every year. But the shock value in the marketplace is always on the export side. And I think what historically has happened is those USDA numbers become kind of that first reference point that everybody points to and say, well, do we think that number is too high or too low? And so those will be the first numbers. I think we will see some additional tweaking that goes on for the old crop demand numbers. On the consumption side, I do think we'll see a little bit upward movement again in the total forecast for exports for both corn and soybeans. But again, we'll wait to see, obviously. And from then on, it's going to be really this rest of the summer, it's going to be all about the production side. How many bushels are we going to get? And weather forecasts. I know before we came on, we were visiting a little bit about what's happening in South America. You know, the size of the South American crop is obviously also a big question mark for the Safrinha corn crop. So there's a lot of unknowns, and I think we're going to see a tremendous amount of volatility all summer long.
Well, what do you suppose exports will look like on Wednesday of this week?
Well, I think there's probably a bigger wild card on the corn side, just because of the reentry of the Chinese corn buying from the U.S. We were expecting that to happen, especially after the Phase 1 agreement was in place and some of those non-tariff trade barriers that have been restricting or limiting trade were eliminated. You know, we were watching that, and I think the corn market was expecting some Chinese purchases, but not to the volumes that we saw. The volumes of both corn as well as barley internationally, as well as sorghum that came, that demand base from China for those feed grain part of it, it was just much, much higher than expected. So the question comes, well, will that demand base, does USDA forecast or project that demand base is going to stick? Or is this transitional? Is this something that will be a stopgap to allow the Chinese to rebuild some of their own domestic production? Because there are some forecasts for increased corn plantings in China again this year. You know, there's a private think tank that was looking at about 3.5% increase in planted acreage would put them, you know, well over 100 million acres of corn planted in China this year. Now, their average yields are lower than they are in the U.S., but, you know, that kind of an increase will help with domestic supplies. What will the number look like? My suspicion is a number very similar to, I think, what we're seeing today with the current old crop forecast is. USDA tends to be a little bit slow and careful and cautious in making kind of any kind of major adjustments or changes. So I do think the export number for both corn and beans will be similar to the numbers we're seeing for old crop. But, you know, there's always this uncertainty. What is that going to look like? And the advantage of the USDA supply demand report is they try to look at the flow of grain internationally as well as what's happening domestically in the U.S.
Well, will old crop go up, do you think? It's now at 2.675 billion bushels. That was up 75 million bushels from March to April. And USDA in its outlook said new crop would be 2.65.
Right. And so I don't expect, I really don't expect the old crop corn export number to increase. This is just my personal bias. I really don't see that. Yes, we had an announcement just recently. China came in and bought some more U.S. corn, but China is not the only country that buys a bunch of corn from us. And so we do have to look as corn prices go up. The whole idea behind higher corn prices is try and ration use. And there are some international buyers now that are backing away from U.S. corn and saying, look, we just can't afford this. And so I really don't think if you look at total exports for old crop, I don't think the USDA number will increase much or will change much from our April report. But recognize the dynamics in the corn market have changed significantly since we got their initial forecast in the Outlook Forum in January. So I would not be surprised to see a little bit higher corn export number coming out of the WASD on Wednesday for new crop.
If you don't expect the old crop export number to change or not to change by very much, then that would feel pretty negative to the marketplace, I would think.
Well, the other part of the equation is what's going to happen with ethanol. And we are now seeing a rebound total weekly ethanol production is staying, you know, relatively stable. But we are seeing miles driven begin to increase, which we usually see seasonally coming into the summer months. We've also, you know, again, the wild card, the hardest one to forecast, of course, is the feed and residual number. And the tendency is we burn through our crop faster. You know, we don't have quite as much spoilage and wastage. I know the livestock prices have suffered some because of the higher corn prices, but
the total animals being fed and the amount of corn being consumed, I don't think has changed that much. So even though the exports number, in my opinion, will stay relatively stable, I do expect to see a slight uptick in the total ethanol number, and we may see some adjustments in the feed number, and that's the obviously the hardest one to come up with, and it's just the hardest one to track.
What's been the impact of the shrinking size of the safrinha crop corn in Brazil?
That definitely has, psychologically, that has a huge impact. And in my view, a fair portion, a pretty large portion of the increase we're seeing in corn right now is that risk, that uncertainty factor, or the risk premium being built into U.S. corn, especially old crop U.S. corn, based on the size of that safrinha crop. And I know that again, we're watching the weather forecasts, not only the CONAB, which is the official, you know, Brazilian version of USDA, but a lot of private forecasters are really starting to take their estimates down for not only total corn production out of Brazil, but also more importantly, the safrinha crop, which is, you know, about a month, almost 2 months ahead of the U.S. corn crop. So they're watching that very, very closely, because the safrinha crop accounts for approximately 75% of Brazil's total corn production. So it's a, you know, this is their big corn crop, is their second crop, which is the one we're watching right now. And that will have an impact on the ability of Brazil as a competitor for U.S. grains to be able to compete and supply as an alternative source of corn in particular. We do have a couple others in the marketplace globally that we need to watch. One of them is Ukraine. Now their volumes, export volumes, are much lower than Brazil or even Argentina. Argentina is also in very difficult shape for their corn and soybean yield potential. So again, there's a lot of dynamics going on right now, and could that increase? Well, the question I have is, will that be old crop or new crop purchases? And again, I think most of, if Brazil does have a corn shortfall, in my opinion, it'll have a bigger impact on the new crop corn exports or export potential rather than necessarily the old crop, just because of the timing and the price differentials we're looking between old crop and new crop.
On that note, at this price level, what are you telling producers about new crop corn sales?
Okay, so what I can sell some. Okay, this is the whole idea behind marketing, is because of, and especially this year, given all the uncertainty in the marketplace. One of the things that I remind farmers, and I ask this question, is, so how do you measure whether you've done a good job of marketing your grain? I mean, what benchmark do you as a farm manager use to say, I did a really good job of marketing last year? And unfortunately, we have this mentality, well, if I don't market at the highest price of the year, I'm not doing a good job. And the fallacy in that is that you're never going to market at the high of the year. That's almost a mathematical impossibility. It's like winning the lottery. Sometimes you get lucky, yes, but that's not a marketing strategy. And the real issue is, did you make some money? Were you able to lock in those sales at a profit margin that you feel comfortable with? And what I'm challenging farmers to do is think about, what is your return on investment? What's your cost of production per bushel? And then figure out, well, if I were to pre-sell some for harvest delivery today, what kind of a return on investment could I get? And in most cases, a lot of farmers are happy with a 10 to 15, sometimes a 20% ROI. If you do the math today on a per bushel basis, most corn farmers are looking at somewhere between 40 and 50% ROI. And I'm just asking them, what is the problem with that? So to try and sell some, to try and market some at today's levels is, in my opinion, a very smart move. That doesn't mean you sell the whole crop. And it still means that if you have a nice rally this summer, you can make some additional sales.
Hey, thank you.
All right, very good. I appreciate the invitation, and always good visiting with you.
It's good to visit with you too, Frayne. Frayne Olson is an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension in Fargo. Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics is now here to discuss the weather forecast. It's a beautiful day in central Illinois. Mark, thank you for being here today. Hope things are as nice in Chicago.
Well, thanks, Todd. Things aren't quite as nice, at least the past few hours here in northern Illinois. Had some rain showers come through, very scattered, very light. But looking forward to seeing the sun again up here.
I bet you are. So let's start, though, with where the sun has been shining almost relentlessly in Brazil. What do we know about conditions there?
Yeah, dryness continues to be an issue there. Yeah, sunny skies, a lack of rain, and actually above normal temperatures. That has been the pattern recently and looks to stay that way across much of the Safrinha Corn Belt over the next couple of weeks. The only minor rain opportunity for Brazil is coming up on May the 12th, so just 2 days from now, but it looks very minor, not expecting much in the way of any kind of widespread rains, but only scattered activity there.
I think probably it's important to note how large of a geographic area this is and for how long it's really been dry. Can you give me an idea?
Yeah, certainly, Todd. Well, the driest area so far this growing season has been in the states of Paraná and into Mato Grosso do Sul. And, similar geographically, it's kind of, putting together the states of Illinois and Indiana and into Ohio. And just from a general geographic standpoint. And so it's not like all of the Safrinha Corn Belt has been really dry, but certainly for that southern part of the belt, it's actually been the driest growing season since 2000.
Speaking of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, how was the rainfall over the weekend?
Well, it was moderate to heavy and widespread across much of the region. Obviously needed, especially in Iowa, which has been one of the areas that has missed out on recent rains. So overall, a good soak here over the weekend. And looking ahead, it does look like, at least for this week, the heavier rains are now done, a little light scattered activity at times. But those widespread heavy rains of this past weekend are now done for the time being.
Is there a change in the pattern that will allow more rainfall to enter into the northern half of the Corn Belt?
It does look like things are going to be changing here, Todd, and that starts late this week over the weekend. Well, temperatures will start warming up and getting into a bit more of a west or even southwest flow pattern. And with that warm-up will also be an increase in rain activity. Again, nothing exceptionally wet, but kind of back to more of a normal or seasonal type of rainy pattern beginning to set up next week here.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. He came to us on this Monday afternoon from Northern Illinois. Our thanks to him for joining us here and helping us to wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.